what's going on, everybody? This is episode 4 of the Baywatch podcast. I am one of your hosts, Mr. Span, and I am here with my lovely wife. Say what's up to the people, baby.
It's popping.
Well, all right. And yeah, we're here for episode 4 of the Baywatch podcast. We didn't record last week, but we are here with two movies to review. Fuck's so funny, man.
We didn't record last week.
Well, we didn't. I mean,
could have just kept it rolling.
I'm just saying. I mean, you know what? I could have, but it wasn't like people were like, wait a minute, God damn it. What? The Baywatch shit didn't come on? What the fuck, man? So, yeah. But we got two movies to review for y'all, man. We went to go see A Star is Born, and we also saw Bad Times at El Royale. So we're going to be reviewing both of those flicks today. But before we do, of course, we got to remind you guys how to get in touch with us over here at the Baywatch podcast, and let your voices be heard over here, y'all. You can hit us up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave voicemail messages. We will play them on the show, and we'll respond to you guys right here as well. And I'm getting notifications on my computer right now. Jesus Christ. Notifications everywhere.
You are notification squad to the max.
I'm just saying. But yeah, go ahead and send those voicemails and let your voice be heard that way. Hit us up on the email too at feedback@thebaywatchpod.com. That's feedback@thebaywatchpod.com. Leave those emails. We'll read those emails and respond to those emails here live on the show. You can follow the both of us on Twitter. My name is Mr._Span, and my lovely wife's Twitter is
Podcast Bay.
There you go. So go ahead and follow us, chop it up with us throughout the week. Also, hit up the website at www.thebaywatchpodcast.com, or is it thebaywatchpod.com? Thebaywatchpod.com is the website. Go there and vote in the polls or leave comments there. We had a poll up for which movie you guys wanted us to go see next. And when you guys did vote, we went to go see A Star is Born. So your votes do count over here at the Baywatch podcast.
Your votes,
man,
count everywhere. Get out and vote.
Yeah, do that shit.
And while before they make that shit illegal.
And while we doing that shit, take y'all ass to the polls. Get yourself a vote sweatshirt or long sleeve tee out of the Spanport Podcast Network store, man. Get yourself some merch. Do yourself a favor and do that. And hook us up too. We like that. Real talk. But hey baby, how you been?
Good. Oh, I just have a little announcement. Yeah, I have 11 followers on Twitter. Hey,
whoop, whoop.
So I just do want to let you know, when y'all get this Podcast Bay Twitter to 50 followers, I will be doing a giveaway. So I'll use like Rafflecopter or some other such mode to decide who wins it. But you'll probably get some kind of special movie and TV related jazzy type of situation. So tell your friends, follow me. I'm gonna try to tweet more. It's a struggle, but I'm gonna try to tweet more and live tweet some things coming up this week.
Y'all better go and follow my wife. Check you out. Like, she giving shit away and stuff, man. This is news to me. This is the first I'm hearing. I'm like, wait a minute, baby, giving some stuff away? Let me guess, I'm not eligible to win, right?
No. You can't win. I mean, if you just want to buy yourself something, because you're going to be buying it. Fine.
I'll buy myself something and say I won. But no, yeah, man, hook that up. Go ahead and follow my wife at Podcast Bay on Twitter and be a part of that raffle, man. Get yourself something on the free. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, do that. But like I said, we are reviewing two films. That we saw over the course of the last 2 weeks, man. And the very first movie that we're going to review right now is A Star is Born. We saw this 2 weeks ago. Was it 2 weeks ago or just last week?
It was
last week.
Last week, but like, was it the beginning? I'm not sure. It was last week.
I believe it was Friday. Last Friday. We went to go see this.
Yeah.
And, well, first things first, babe. Well, we're going to read the synopsis first, right? It says, a musician helps a younger singer find fame. Even his age and alcoholism send his own career into a downward spiral.
Which is, like, the least of the situation of what I got from it. But, I mean, all right.
Well, the alcohol part, I definitely got out of it. You could tell there was a little bit of an age difference, but it wasn't as pronounced as they're making it out in this synopsis here. But your overall feeling for this movie, babe, how did you feel about it?
I
did you like it?
I love that movie.
Okay.
I loved it.
Like, babe giving it the 4 stars right off the bat.
I mean, I went into it as soon as I saw the trailers and like all the commercials for it, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna love it. Like, I was pretty sure I was gonna love it.
Yeah.
You know, I love me some Lady Gaga. Whew, she was doing some acting, okay?
Okay.
Sis was doing some acting, but I really loved it. I mean, just like the emotional rawness of it, just, it was a good movie.
Yeah, okay.
I loved it.
So, I'm going to say that I like this movie too, right? I was actually surprised by how much I like this movie.
Really?
Yeah, because this isn't the type of movie that I would actually go to the movies to see. Like, it, you know, this is
no, it's not. I can't see.
This is kind of a departure from what I would typically go to. Like, if I saw this film, it would probably have been normally. It would have probably been like it was out on like, you know, Blu-ray or like it can't, you know, Netflix finally got it. And I'm like, oh, I'll check this out. But to go to the theater and see it was an actually pretty good experience.
It was great.
And it was also, you know, interesting because there was a lot of people who were there to see this film because they were fans of the previous films, because this, of course, is a remake. And, like, you know, I noticed it was an older crowd there.
I think you probably didn't notice as much as I am, like, always on, like, high alert of, like, who was coming in and out. Like, I don't know why.
Uh-huh.
That's why I hate going to the movies when it's, like, a big night, because I cannot pay attention if there's people, like, moving up and down and all about. Like, I need to know what the fuck you doing.
Right.
Where you going? What you got?
Right.
Like, I need to see. There were a lot of people that were there because they were fans of Lady Gaga.
Well, yeah.
They're, I'm speaking about the older ladies.
It was a bunch of older ladies there.
The whole back row of people that were there was, mm-hmm. like, pretty much all, like, living for Lady Gaga, like, giving her the yes and the snaps and all that. Like, they were getting their entire life because Lady Gaga was on the screen. So, right. I did notice that there were a lot of people. And I think there were also a lot of people that were there because it was Bradley Cooper. As a country music star.
Yeah. Now, with Bradley Cooper, this is also something I didn't know that Bradley Cooper could sing.
That man can sing down, okay?
I didn't know that Bradley Cooper can sing, but I also did read that he had taken vocal lessons and learned, like, in guitar lessons over the course of 3 years leading up to the filming of this movie.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, to see that level of dedication to the role, I thought was pretty good as well. And it came through. Like, you could tell it came through. Of course, there was some creative editing, you know, to make it look as if he was really riffing, like he was riffing in the film. But
well,
like,
actually,
most of the scenes
where they were performing at concerts were actual concerts where they went. I can't remember who the artist. I think one of the artists might have been Travis Tritt.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually went either as like the opening act or like almost at the end of the concert, and they performed on the stage in front of those crowds, but they didn't have the speakers on, so only like the first 3 or 4 rows could actually hear that it was not, you know, whoever the person was.
Right.
And they did say that at first they had to edit, like, people would see Lady Gaga and they would scream, like, some people would scream like Gaga, Gaga. They had to edit that out, but soon after they realized, or like there was like, you know, like not casting calls for extras, but like the people that would be able to hear what right. was going on were kind of informed or whatever. And they started to say like, Allie, Allie. Like, so they were actually in these huge like concert venues and stuff, like singing and performing these songs. So it wasn't like they just edited that in. Like, I'm sure on some of the close-ups there was some jazzy editing,
but
actually played live on the stage and sang. They actually sang live on stage in front of like thousands of people.
Dig that. Babe, with the actual factuals and shit. She's like, no, nigga, no. They actually performed. They actually had crowds, nigga. You are not about to throw the shade at Gaga. That's not what's about to happen. No. But, so, of course, this story is, like, basically, like, how he comes across Allie. And he's performing in her town. And he, of course, like, his character, Bradley Cooper's character, I forget what his name is.
Jackson Maine.
Jackson Maine. So Jackson Maine is a really big, was he a country star?
Yeah,
he was
kind of like
country pop.
He is country, but in, not like new country. He wasn't like Tim McGraw country. He was like country new, like just like the, that's how like the, all of the country artists are now.
Okay. So he's performing in her town, and it just so happens that Allie is a singer as well, but she's been having a hard time breaking through through the industry because of her looks. And he, after leaving his concert in her city, instead of going to his hotel, instead of going home, he says, I don't want to go home, man. I want to go to a bar. Just take me to a bar. And he ends up in this bar. Just happens to have a lot of drag performers in this bar. And like the doorman was like kind of awestruck that he wants to come in there. Like, you're Jackson Maine. Like, what the fuck are you doing here kind of thing? And he says, you know, where's the bar? You guys got a bar? You know, he's like, yo, you act. He was totally kind of confused as to why Jackson Maine would be there. But he says, well, you really got to hear my girl Allie sing. And she sings this, what was the name of that French song that she sang? I don't know the name of that song, but
Love, La Vie en Rose.
Yeah, I was like, man, I don't understand the damn thing she's saying, but that shit sound good. And he, it's almost as if he fell in love with her right then. Like, he was crying after the end of her fucking performance and everything. And he goes backstage to meet with her and, you know, they kind of get to know one another. Now, this whole thing about them, like, spending the night with each other, though. Like, he's taking her wherever he goes. Like, how often... Well, of course, that doesn't happen often. But how realistic do you think that something like that is?
I mean, I think it's realistic when you kind of think about... he's wealthy. Mm-hmm. So, it's not like regular Joe Schmo is taking you, like, from the bar on the street to Applebee's to Walmart to wherever. Like, he's kind of has like access to places. He's kind of taking her to and from. I mean, I think it's realistic. Like, if you like somebody and you're kind of feeling that vibe and you don't really have shit to do the next day, or even if you do, and she's like young in this kind of state where like she seems like a type that would make that kind of decision. Like, I didn't really see, I didn't think it was unrealistic that, they kind of like the night just kind of carried on. Plus, like, they're out, like, they're kind of like partying, drinking, like those kind of nights kind of tend to like carry on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like, you know, like I sometimes, like, I guess for me, like, just in the current climate of things, like the idea of even the fact that this guy's, you know, famous, like the idea of, well, he just rolls up into my job and then I'm a walk, you know, I'm leaving with this guy.
Well, it wasn't her job.
Well, she was singing.
She was performing at a club because right. the they allowed her to. So it was something she does for fun.
Okay. Even with that. Like, he rolls up here and, like, you know, we just going to go on a night on the town. Like, just considering the current climate or the way things are now, like, I was just kind of like, I don't know if that would really happen.
See,
like
I
that.
Think totally the opposite. I think considering the climate of the way a lot of, especially like this whole, like, the whole, these like IG models and like everyone wants to be with somebody famous. Everybody's like somebody famous's baby mama. I think that even makes it even more realistic that you would just kind of like go along with whatever. Like, I guess there's like two sides to how you kind of can see things. Because, I mean, I've had friends that have encountered somebody famous and like the night kind of carries on from there with like, you know, whatever may happen. But I could see why you may think like, would a girl be that cautious? But I think if he had just been a regular guy, then no, I think dude was like an international superstar. So I think she kind of, and I also think like they had a very interesting, like they had a very interesting connection at first. And I think that's, that is an important factor to why the night kind of carried on like that. Like, neither one of them really wanted to like end it or leave right. or whatever. They were both feeling it, and I think that's why it didn't strike me as like weird that like they would just continue to like hang out. Like, if one or the other had been kind of like iffy or not, like if she had been not really feeling him or whatever, or she just was a different kind of person, then I could see that. Like, if it was me, like, bye, I have to go.
Well, you know what, though? Like, she did kind of give him that vibe, though. Like, not necessarily that she was feeling him that way, but more so like she was like kind of stunned that he was so into her talent, mm-hmm. right? Because she had been rejected so many times, you know, as she says, because of her look and everything else, that maybe she had just been jaded by people in the industry who were like, yeah, you may be blowing smoke up my ass right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so like, you know, she parties with him, you know, they go out, they have a really good time that night. And, you know, he tells her, he's like, yo, I want you to come to my show, like the next show, I want you to perform. And she doesn't believe him. She kind of blows him off.
Yeah.
And he sends his driver like, yeah, don't leave until you bring her back here. And like his driver fucking harassed this lady all the way up to her job, to where she's like, all right, fuck it. You know, like,
well, I mean, also her boss pissed her off, yeah, her too. Boss, so it was just kind of like a culmination, yeah, of all the things. Like,
she already hated her job. Like,
so she was like, shit, like, get me out of here.
I ain't got to take this shit. Nigga, I quit. Fuck this job. Nigga. But, so yeah, she goes to the concert and she's backstage and he just kind of, springs it on her that he wants her to sing the song that she kind of sang to him the night before.
Yeah.
In front of thousands of motherfuckers.
But he's
people.
Already, like, made an arrangement with his band and, yeah, everything, which also believable, because you have to, what I had to really stop and think was he is supposed to be an international, like, a huge superstar. Like, they're performing at, like, what we would, I don't know that how to say that word right now, but what we would say, like, Ford Field. Or something like that. Like, he's performing at, like, Comerica Park. Like, mm-hmm. He's not, you know, just over here at the Masonic Temple.
He's not doing Little Caesars Arena.
No. Well, he could be doing Little Caesars. You know, but he's supposed to be an international superstar.
Not the music hall, but
no, he's not. He's not at the music hall. He is supposed to be, like, a huge international, yeah, superstar. Right. So, like, all of these things, I'm like, okay, I get it. He's an international super. It's not like he's just some little, like, whoever.
Right.
You know, he's a, you know, superstar.
Yeah, I get it. So, of course, at first she's like, she's really, she's apprehensive. She doesn't really want to do it. He did kind of spring the shit upon her. But then she eventually kind of just like, I gotta, like, this is my shot.
Yeah.
Like, this is my shot. This is what I've always wanted. And it's right here in front of me. I need to take it.
Yeah.
And she goes out there and she kills it.
Yes.
Because, I mean, she's Lady Gaga.
Well, I mean, yes, there's that. Yeah. But, I mean, she does go out. They could have, you know, it could have been written that she went out there and kind of fucking
bombed
it, poo-pooed it. But she went out there and killed it.
Okay. So, she goes out there. She kills it. And he basically just kind of like brings her on tour with him. Like, she does her own songs. They do duets together. But of course, over the course of time, you know, they're developing this relationship, this romantic relationship with one another. And it's apparent that this dude is an alcoholic, that he's suffering from an addiction.
He's suffering from many things. He is an, yeah, alcoholic, which is, they did, I didn't even notice until, like, thinking back on it, the way that they, like, did his makeup or whatever to make him always seem, like, kind of red and, like, sweaty and, like, you know, leathery. Like, the way that, because that's Bradley,
like,
Cooper.
Like a well-worn jacket.
Yeah, like, Bradley Cooper does not normally look like that. And, yeah, they had Jackson look like he got rode hard and put away wet. Like, he was not. They had him looking a mess. Like, even, like, you know, the way he was, like, kind of thin and just, like, always kind of, like, hunched over and, yeah, stuff. Like, they really did that. And he was also suffering because of hearing loss.
Yeah.
So he was losing his hearing.
Tinnitus, I believe that's, yeah, what it was.
And he was having, he had, like, all this depression and stuff from, like, his father and
his brother.
And he had all kinds of, you know, family feelings or whatever to kind of sort out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely like he was self-medicating with the alcohol, you know, with the relationship with his brother and his father. And I know he told Allie that his mother died when he was born, so he never had a relationship with her. So he's basically been kind of living a life where outside of his music, he doesn't really have a whole lot.
Yeah.
So, and it was kind of weird too, because there was a scene where they were in the grocery store, and like she had like, okay, so they got into a fight at a cop bar and she like punched a cop out because like they're just trying to, you know, mind their own business and the cop won't leave them alone.
Yeah.
And she punches the fucking cop and they leave, and he takes her to a grocery store to put like frozen peas on her hand or whatever. And they're at the checkout lane, and the lady at the checkout lane,
Lunel,
just like straight up just put her motherfucking phone up and takes his picture and shit. And she wanted to deck Lunel, like, what the fuck? But she was like, how do you deal with that? You know, like, how do you deal with people like talking at you and always wanting something from you? And he just kind of like rolls with that because
he's used to it. He's accepted it as part of part of his fame.
Yeah. So, let's see, what else happens after that?
I mean, you kind of went backwards because
I know. I mean, I did go backwards for
so
that.
So they go on the tour and such, and then the guy who's like A&R from some record label comes up to her, and he's like, you know, that was amazing or whatever, and he becomes her manager. Mm. But this guy immediately like does not like Jackson because he kind of sees what's going on, and he kind of wants to push Allie in like a different direction, it kind of seems like. Mm-hmm. And also I think her own personal direction of what she had going on, I think she didn't want to be a country artist. Mm-hmm. I think she probably was one of those people that, like, I mean, she was singing a song in French, like, she was writing all these different, she was, like, a pop artist.
Right.
So, I think that was kind of a point of, like, kind of contention between Allie and Jackson, when he like, called her music embarrassing or whatever.
Most definitely.
So, Allie kind of starts to, like, after the video of her going on stage that very first time kind of goes viral, she starts to kind of, like, pop. Like, she starts to kind of get more famous. Like, she gets a deal with the record label and the manager and stuff, and he's kind of trying to push her and, you know, and do what I want and whatever else, but she kind of pushes back. Like, she does that performance of that fucking bop of a song. That song is a jam. She does that performance and she's like, you know, she doesn't want the dancers on the stage. Like, she changes her hair. She's got different wardrobe. She's kind of, like, coming into her own. And Jackson, it's like the attention, her attention is solely not on him anymore. She can't go on his tour. She can't go, you know, to do whatever, like, little promotional things and stuff that he had to do. She has her own things that she needs to do to, mm-hmm. like, further her career. And there kind of becomes, like, this separation between them. Like, he's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And while she, like, her career is going, you know, further and further up.
Now, the conflict between Jackson, Allie, and Allie's manager, I think his name was Ramon. And I'm looking at it. Anthony Ramos played him, Ramon. I think that she was kind of rebelling against the both of them. There was Jackson who had this idea of the whole pop thing not being authentic.
Yeah.
And he wanted her to stay authentic to the music. Stay authentic to yourself. Don't sell out to, you know, these corporate interests who want to just repackage you and sell you in a certain type of way. And then there was Ramon, who was certainly trying to repackage her.
He's trying to cut the check.
In a certain kind of way.
He's trying to get a check.
Yeah, right. So, like, there was that instance where you talked about, you know, she wanted to have the performance, but she cut the dancers.
Yeah.
Ramon was pissed that she cut the dancers. And she's like, no, this is how I envision this for me.
Yeah.
And so she was kind of like, there was a little bit of a push and pull between not only Allie and Jackson, but Allie and Ramon as well. Like, she was really fighting for that independence and, okay, I got this. I'm here now. This is who I am. And I want y'all to take me as I am, as opposed to just trying to repackage me. Or to say that what I'm doing is inauthentic.
Yeah.
So there was definitely that going on. Now, how did you, like, I know at a certain point, like, we get to a point where Jackson is
a slob kebab.
Yeah, like, he's totally off of, like, his wagon, man. Like, he's missing fucking appointments. He's not showing up for shit. Like, they couldn't find this guy anywhere. There was a performance that Allie had that she really wanted him to show up to, and this motherfucker is passed out on his neighbor's lawn. Yeah. And his neighbor just so happens to fucking be Dave Chappelle.
Which, like, is his, like, long-time friend.
Yeah, long-time friend. Like, they've known each other since they were kids.
I don't think that was about his neighbor. That was, like, his long-time friend.
So he just showed up and, like, fell asleep in the yard? I thought it was because they lived next door or something.
It wasn't. They didn't live next door. Oh. Like, that was, like, their long-time friend.
Oh, I thought it was,
or like, his long-time friend.
And, yeah, like, he knew him for a long time. But, so, like, you know, that's where you get the scene where, you know, he's saying, like, you know, this is one of the first times I ever worried about you.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on with you and everything else. And, you know, Allie's pissed. Like, she comes over there, finds this dude, like, over at, you know, what's Dave should have been? George Noodles Stone.
George.
His name is George Noodles Stone. Why Noodles, though?
Because that was his nickname, I think.
Okay. And, you know, she meets Noodles' family and, you know, they kind of have like a bond there where it's almost as if Allie is getting a chance to meet somewhat Jackson's extended family.
Yeah.
Because the only family that she's known Jackson to have has been his brother, who was also his manager, who he got in a fight with and fired.
Which then, in turn, like, his brother not being there, he gets more sloppy because his brother is the only person that could kind of corral him and, like, kind of control, like, what was going on and kind of make sure he was okay. So now all of that responsibility is kind of left on Allie, but she has her own shit to do. So, like, while she is deeply in love with him, like, it's apparent that she, like, loves him.
Right.
Is truly, truly, like, soul to soul in love with him. Her life was not dedicated to him as, like, how his brother.
Right.
His life was kind of dedicated to him. But the thing I did find strange was, like, okay, so he's drunk, ends up, you know, on George's yard or whatever. But then, like, all of a sudden, it's like, you guys should get married. What?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that all happened in the same.
It kind of did, because when she showed up, when she showed up looking for,
yeah, she Jackson, finally, yeah, she showed up,
and then you look up and they're having dinner, and, you know, George's family is like, oh my god, you know, you're Allie, and I saw the video, and they were just doing that thing, and then Jackson goes to the back, and I think he cuts off some twine from a guitar string, and he just, like, you know, folds it up and presents it as a wedding ring, and it's like, yeah, let's go down there and get married now.
Yeah.
And boom, they were married. And
yeah, he's like, oh yeah, my friend has a church.
Yeah, like, he's like, yeah, let's go do this.
And they go and get, which, considering the strength of the connection that they had, I get it. But then again, I was just like, nigga, what? like this nigga was just missing in action, passed out on the lawn, and you as his best friend gonna suggest, like, go ahead and get married? How about suggest some rehab?
I think, well, rehab would have been a good suggestion. And he did end up going to rehab.
Yeah.
But I think what Noodles saw in Allie was someone who could take care of Jackson. Like, he looked at Jack as someone who was in need of someone to take care of him at that point.
Yeah.
And he saw that in Allie. Like, Allie, he really thought that she had his best interest at heart. Someone that, you know, outside of his brother would. But at the same time, Allie has her own shit going on. Like, her career is blowing up, and she can't really pay him as much attention as Jack probably required at that time.
Yeah.
So, you know, they get married, and it's, you know, Allie's career is still kind of blowing up, but it is actually blowing up to the point where she's nominated for a Grammy.
And wins.
And wins the Grammy, and shit hits the fan when Jackson shows up. Actually, Jackson was supposed to perform at the Grammys, but his feelings were kind of hurt with the fact that no one has asked him to sing at the Grammys.
Well, at first they asked him to sing, but then they found this new kid that they wanted to sing. So he was supposed to sing at first, which that would have been a fucking shit show in itself.
Would it have done? I don't know if he would have gotten as shit faced if he would have been performing.
Fucking wasted.
No, I know he was wasted. What I'm saying is, had they not changed plans on him, where he would have been the lead performer, I don't think Jackson would have gotten as fucked up as he did.
I mean, it was
when they switched it up on him and they just relegated him to a background guitar.
It was
player.
A combination, like the fact that it was a tribute to, was it George Strait? I'm not sure who it was.
Some country guy.
It was a tribute to somebody. So it wasn't that he was just like part of the band. Like he was on stage and had like a solo. He was, you know, part. We're supposed to believe that Jackson Maine is like really known for his guitaring, right. Guitar playing. I don't know. Right. So like he was like featured, but he wasn't like the main singer person. But also part of it was that he could not hear.
Right.
He hear. Well, and part of that tinnitus is you hear a ringing right. in your ear. So it was very, very severe for him that as well. So that added to like the fact that he was drunk or whatever, but that added to the like him not being he's used to being a lead singer. So you're in front, there's monitors there so you can hear like what's going on, you know, where to start, where to go. There was none of that because he was standing
right.
back away
right.
So he kind of was just like, okay, what the fuck, like there's like that moment of panic where he like can't hear what's going on and he just starts playing like, but I mean luckily like at the right time, but then I don't know how he just even got even more drunk.
Yeah, he got fucking hammered, man. So like he goes out, they, you know, to the audience to sit with his wife. She wins the Grammy and
could barely even walk.
He couldn't, like he looked sick. Like, you know, like he looked like somebody who was just ready to like you know, like throw up drunk. That's how he looked. He looked throw up drunk.
He looked and, shit yourself drunk.
Yeah,
like he looked just like he was about sweaty, to lose every liquid.
Sweaty and fucking just yeah, awful. Man. So she decides to they kind of walk up to the stage, but she decides like, look, I can't do, like she leaves him by the steps of the stage.
He couldn't go up. He couldn't the steps. Go up. He kind of right. tripped, so he was like, I'll just stay here. Yeah.
And she's up there. She's trying to accept her award, and she's naming all folks. And I think she hadn't named him soon enough.
No, it was that she named him because she was like, I want to thank my husband, blah blah blah. But he's sitting there like babbling.
Yeah.
And he starts to yell. He's like, what did she win? Like all this. He like tries to get up. And then
he gets up there
and
he stands next to her.
Pees.
And he just starts pissing himself.
He pees.
In front of the world, man.
Yeah.
And
it was embarrassing. It was fucked up.
Because the look on his face was like,
yeah, like you would think he was like on the toilet, but he just
let that shit go.
I mean, long story short, then he goes to rehab.
Yeah, then he go to rehab.
Oh, but I did want to talk about previous to that whole thing happening when she was in the bath and they had that fight, mm-hmm. and he calls her ugly.
Yeah,
and that was something that was like trigger. Like I'm done. Get the fuck out of my face. Like, woo, that was a rough scene.
Yeah, because, you know, up until that point, he was the one person who was telling her how beautiful she was.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden,
and she didn't believe him. She felt like he was blowing smoke up her ass. And yeah. then for him to like kind of come out and say, you're ugly.
Yeah.
It was like, you've been believing this all this time. You've mm-hmm. just been blowing smoke up my ass.
Mm, that was terrible.
Yeah, so
I can't even imagine.
Imagine what?
Like, getting called ugly by, like, your husband.
Oh, yeah, that's fucked up.
Whoo! I probably would just go get in the trash can. Like, what do you even do after that? Like, what can you even... That's, like, the worst. You know, you can say I have a big head. You can say whatever. But, like, just, like, you ugly. Like, woo! Like, he was like, you're just fucking ugly. Whoa!
And I think a lot of that, although he was wrong in saying that, but it kind of came back to the whole authenticity thing.
Yeah.
And I think he wasn't necessarily saying that she herself was ugly, but the person that she was becoming and everything that she was being packaged into, I think he was more so critiquing that.
I don't think, I think personally. he was going for the jugular. Anymore. I think other things he said were like kind of going towards that, but I think he was going for the jugular. He was just being mean. And he knew that that would be the number one thing. Like, I don't really feel like you have any insecurities. Well, I'm sure there are some, but I'm not going to announce them over the... You're, like, a super confident person. So, like, I don't think... I'm sure if I really thought about it, I could think of something that I could say to you that would just, like... That would just be like one shot where you, it would just shut you up. You know what I'm saying?
You like, really want to talk about my hairline right now, don't you?
I mean, I feel like you joke with the rest of us about it. Like, I feel like to be really mean and spiteful, I don't think that would be the thing that would get you. I think you've kind of like accepted that. And like, luckily you are a good looking bald man. So,
well, thank you,
baby. You've kind of, you know what I'm saying? But there's just like, everyone has that one thing that's like they're most insecure about that. Like, if you say it, it's going to be like world crushing, just like soul crushing.
Well, maybe it's the fact that I don't have sides on them.
I think that hurts me more than it hurts you. I don't know. But anyway, but we can, let's move on.
Well, my Freddy Krueger finger, that's what it is.
Oh God. The Freddy Krueger. let's move on.
Oh man. So yeah, he goes to rehab, he gets himself cleaned up, and you know, she's still there for him. Like, she's still there for him. She can't wait for him to get back home, you know. And I think there's still some animosities between the two of them, partly because that ugly thing that he said about her being ugly.
Yes, that
still kind of lingers.
That and like, you win. You're a new artist. You win Best New Artist. Like that. Like that was like a crowning moment, literally. Yeah. For her, and he ruined it.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of made a fool of her. And, like, just, like, the emotional battering that you go through when you're a loved one is, like, an alcoholic or a drug addict or anything like that. Just, like, that's why they have, like, rehab for the family members and loved ones. Because, like, just that emotional, like, beating that you kind of go through with that was, it was obviously weighing on her.
Yeah. So they go through him going through rehab. He comes out and, you know, he's saying all of the right things, right? I guess the cliche is that's what a lot of folks who come out of rehab, they start out really fucking good. They're saying all the right things. They're trying to follow the steps.
I think he sincerely was trying.
I do too.
I think the fucked up part is that fucking manager. Yeah. Allie's fucking manager was like, had to fucking break it to him, like, you know, she was going to cancel part of her European tour to, like, stay and be with him and whatever else, which, like, to me, part of me is like, no, girl, you shouldn't do it. Fuck these niggas. Like, make your money, do your thing. Like, this is your dream. But then the other part of me is like, that's your husband.
Right.
And she was deeply in love with him. So I understood, like, I would do the same fucking thing. Like, if you're at home and, you know, you're sick or whatever and you need to meet, fuck everything else. Like, that can all be pushed aside. That can wait. Because at the end of the day, like, you know what I'm saying? You're a Grammy Award winning singer and whatever. Like, that's cool and all. But, like, at the end of the day, when you come home, the person that you love being there is, like, better than anything else. So, like, I understood why she did it.
I understood why she did it as well.
Ramon... But the manager goes and says some fucked up shit to him.
Well, yeah, basically on some, it's going to be either me or you.
Yeah.
Kind of shit. Like, and...
like, it's her career or it's you.
Yeah, and, that's a heavy fucking thing to put on somebody who is...
he's fresh out of rehab.
Fresh out of rehab, dealing with some very fucked up emotional issues.
He's raw. He's emotionally raw. Like, he's, you know...
and to put that on him in that way, was definitely... I think, Ramon doesn't get his comeuppance that he should. But this isn't that kind of movie, right? Like, I really feel like somebody should have, like, really checked Ramon a long motherfucking time ago, and it never happened.
I mean,
I guess, like, it's never supposed to happen. Like, it doesn't always happen that way. Like, no one ever really gets their comeuppance when you think that it's supposed to come. Maybe it comes in, just not in this movie, but, like, to go there with him
to say that
was fucked up.
Let me, ooh, child. But the thing is, then, you know, what ends up happens. But if the movie went on or if there was a sequel, I feel like that would be some shit that Ramon is carrying that to his grave.
Oh, yeah.
Because you clearly know.
That conversation is what sparked this man taking his own life.
God.
So before we get to that part, though, there was a conversation that Allie and Jackson had where Allie is lying to Jack. And she's telling him, like, yeah, you know, Ramon wants you to become part of the tour. We're going to do this leg of the tour, and then we'll come back, and, you know, we want you to be a part of this. She has no idea that Ramon just went to Jack and just told him all this shit about, yo, it's either her career or you.
Yeah.
She has no idea, and Jackson's just kind of taking this in, like, man, like, this is some, well, he never says anything, but he knows it's bullshit.
Yeah.
And
he knows, he feels also that guilt of knowing, like,
I could be holding her back.
I'm holding her back. I mean, it's like, I feel him, though, because, like, if I was sick or something, I would feel guilty if you had to miss work. Yeah. And that's on a small scale. You know, this is like, right, a million dollars is being spent on tour and changing this and doing that. Like, yeah, shit, I feel bad if you got to miss one day at work because of me, you know? So, like, that guilt is, like, is overwhelming for him.
Yeah. And,
wow, that chair is squeaky.
Yeah, it is. I have to put some oil on this motherfucker. But, yeah, so, he was supposed to show up to a show that she did that night. And she kept asking whether or not he was there. And, you know, he wasn't. And I want to say they alluded to him hanging himself.
I mean, if you look closely, garage, you could see him hanging through the windows of the garage.
Okay, I couldn't see him hanging in the garage. Yeah, I just know, I saw him, the dog kind of lay down.
God, you know, whew, that dog. The cutest freaking dog in the world. And, like, he makes the dog a steak or whatever, thinking, like, you know, he loves that dog. So, yeah, he, like, makes the dog a steak. And I'm thinking, please, dog, stay in there with that damn steak. But no, the dog comes out.
Looking for his master.
Yeah, looking for a dad. And, like, sits there by the garage. And, like, he's just in there, like, takes off his hat. And, like, oh, God. Backs out his truck and stuff. Oh, God. It was, I think that it was hard. It was an uncomfortable scene, like, uncomfortable situation to watch. Mm-hmm. But I think that they did it really well.
Yeah.
Because it could have gone, him being a, you could have predicted it at many, he would have done it many different kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. Like, he could have OD'd, and that would have been really messy.
I thought initially when he started the truck that he was just going to, like,
put the truck in the
carbon monoxide.
Yeah.
You know, just sit there and go to sleep.
I thought he was going to, I don't know why, but I thought he was going to shoot himself. I don't know where I got that from, but I just, like, thought that's what he was going to do. Mm-hmm. But I think they did it really well. Like, I don't, classy is not the right word, but, like, they did it in a way that it was super emotional. Like, super.
Well,
like,
they did it in a way where you knew what was happening, but they didn't have to exactly,
yeah,
show
they didn't, you, like, it wasn't, like,
you
vulgar.
You knew what it was. Like, it wasn't like you had to see this dude, you know, stepping off of the table or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was done really well. And then, you know, there's the, there comes the realization, because not only, I know we've skipped over a lot of things, but there's the realization that, like, you know, he was reaching out to people and letting them know how he felt about them before he passed on.
Yeah.
Like, there was a scene with his brother where, after, you know, he told his brother, he's like, I always idolized you. It wasn't our dad.
Yeah.
That I was idolizing.
Yeah.
You know, he was making a point to let everyone know how he felt about them. Even in the last scene that he had with Allie, where she lied to him about him joining the tour, mm-hmm, you know, it was like, you know, the whole thing about her nose and everything and how much he wanted to look at her just one last time. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of that was him letting them know how he felt about them. Like, it was definitely like breadcrumbs leading up to that point.
Yeah.
And then, at the end of the movie, Allie, you know, does a song tribute to her, yeah, husband. And really good song, and the end of a really good movie.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if I was there by myself, I'd have been like weeping.
You've been bawling, baby.
I mean, I've been really crying, but, like, no, it's just a full theater. I don't want to be in there, like, boohooing and, like, people looking. But there are people in there, like,
wiping tears,
giving a boohoo. Okay, and I feel them, because that was, whew, it was emotional.
So out of 4 stars.
Four stars. Fabulous. Four? Great. Excellent. I loved it.
Okay. I'll give it 3. Well, I give it 3. I like the movie, babe. Like,
I
it was
loved
a good
it.
Movie.
But you know what? I like, I mean, I don't know. I just, it was my kind of carrying on.
Yeah. I mean, I get, like, again, I told you at the beginning of this that I was surprised by how much I like this movie, because this isn't the typical type of film that I would,
yeah,
go see. But I did like this movie, and so I would give it 3 stars.
I think part of it was, like, the I don't even know. I mean, the acting to me was, like, superb. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, Lady Gaga, if you know anything about her, like, if she does something, like, she does it. Like, she goes in. Right. She gives, like, 1,000,000,000,000%. Like, she's going to go in on whatever, you know, it sets out to do. So, like, I think that was part of it. I think Bradley Cooper was, like, amazing. Like, I think it was just little touches in, like, the acting that kind of, like, pushed over the edge to mm-hmm. me. So, I mean, I loved it.
And then there was, of course, like some, like, random comedian sightings. Like, her dad was Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you have Dave Chappelle, who was George Noodlestone. But then, like, the reverend at the church that they got married in was fucking Eddie Griffin.
Yeah.
like really? Eddie Griffin? There's, like, maybe a favor somebody had to give. And, like, all right, Eddie, you can get a scene. But...
wait, Eddie Griffin?
Eddie Griffin was the...
Or Eddie Griffith?
Griffin.
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 Like... okay.
It's Eddie Griffin. And I'm looking at the... What was it? Eddie Griffin. Pastor. That's his credit. Pastor. And Derek Kevin Jones played Etta James. I don't remember Etta James in this, but okay. Yeah. But that was A Star Is Born. That was our review of it.
Yeah.
And so we move on to another movie that we saw. We saw this movie just last night. And that was Bad Times at El Royale. Now, the synopsis to this film is about... the movie is about seven strangers, each with a secret to bury. They meet at Lake Tahoe's El Royale, a rundown hotel with a dark past. Over the course of one fateful night, everyone will have one last shot at redemption before everything goes to hell. Now, overall, baby, how did you feel about this film?
I have mixed feelings. I thought it was really good. But it was like a roller coaster. But I think that that's like the marker of a really, like, a true suspense movie. Because I mean, I guess you could say suspense thriller, but it was a true suspense movie with, like, all of, like, the crazy twists and turns and, like, you think you know, and then it goes in a completely different direction. Because there were moments, like, I can't remember exactly what was happening, but there was a moment where literally the whole audience, you're on edge and you think something is about to happen, and then it took a completely different turn. Everyone was like, oh, like, I think we all thought the movie was going to end. And then...
yeah, there was a couple of times I was just like, and then it was, yeah, you know, like.
I think it was, like, part of, like, the Billy Lee stuff. Like, we all thought it was going to end, and then they went to, like, a flashback, and we were all just kind of like, oh.
Yeah, so I got, I'm kind of indifferent on this one.
Really?
Yeah, I was kind of indifferent. And only because, like, I feel like, They left too many, like, ends untied.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't.
Like, the whole FBI shit. Like, after the FBI... Okay, so I guess we could just go... try to run the movie down before I get into that. Of course, like, the movie is, like, it's set at this hotel. And the hotel is basically sitting on, like, a dividing line between... California and Nevada, and there are certain rules on, you know, depending on which side of the hotel you're staying on. So on the California side, you have to pay $1 extra per room per night. On the Nevada side, of course, gambling is legal or something like that. They don't really have a hotel staff. They got one dude who is pretty much the receptionist. He's housekeeping. He's the cook. He's everything. And it just so happens that, like, on this particular night, there is a dude who's a priest, and I want to say, like, maybe like a Motown, like, singer.
Yeah, she was like a lounge, not a lounge singer. Well, she was a backup singer.
Yeah, she was a backup singer. And wanted
to be, like, the center of attention.
Okay, let me pull up the cast and crew here so I can get these folks' names right. So Jeff Bridges was Father Daniel Flynn, and Cynthia Elvira, Arrivo. Arrivo?
I think.
She played Darlene Sweet, and she was a singer. And they show up at the Hotel Royale first. John Hamm, who played Laramie Seymour Sullivan, was also there. And they all show up at this hotel, and they're trying to be checked in by what would you call him?
The clerk?
The clerk, who's Miles Miller. So off top, it's kind of an eclectic kind of group,
mm-hmm.
because you have Miles, who's kind of like awkward and like withdrawn, kind of unsure about things, so to speak. And then you have John Hamm, who's playing Laramie Seymour Sullivan, who comes across as like this over aggressive ass vacuum salesman. Mm-hmm. You know, he's really aggressive. Like, he, you know, you can tell he's used to just talking to people and talking to them like in a way in which, you know, to convince them of something. Then you got Father Daniel Flynn, who's, you know, just a forgetful like priest,
mm-hmm.
I guess you could say. And then you have Darlene, who you don't really know what to make of her, because at first I didn't know she was a singer. Like, she just seemed like maybe she was running from something. It came across that way to me, like, because she had all of the, like, the bundles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that she was, like, you know, running away from something, or, you know, she had all of her things with her. That's what it seemed like to me. And, you know, they're trying to check into this hotel. And so, apparently, like, I don't know. I don't know where to go with this. So they check in, but there's like
a creepiness.
Yeah, there's definitely, because again, the hotel is fucking empty. Like, there's no one there.
So there is some kind of John Hamm's character, the vacuum salesman, who we later find out is an FBI agent.
Right.
Kind of, his like little monologue kind of gives you some insight to kind of the reason why he's there, at least, and kind of what the reason for the way the hotel is, where he's talking about how like famous people used to come there, and then they show pictures. There's like Kennedy and Marilyn and everything else, who coincidentally, that's who I believe is supposed to be on the, no, that's who's, that's who's supposed to be on the film. The film that they kept.
Oh, yeah.
So, because they kept, they're like, oh, that guy's dead. Like, I think it's supposed to be John F. Kennedy and Marilyn Monroe.
Okay.
That's on the film. But, so he's kind of giving like a synopsis, or like a, like what's what of the hotel, of like, it used to be this place where like rich people, famous people, government people would come and whatever else. So then, later on, the, what's his name? Father Flynn character. He pretty much finds out, he kind of discovers like this like back hallway where, no, not him. the FBI agent guy.
Yeah.
John Hamm. So he's like going through the room, like debugging the room.
Right. Okay. So I was going to say, before we got to the whole back, you know, the back room thing.
Yeah.
Like, he was an FBI agent, and he knew that there were bugs in the room, and he was moving all the bugs out of the room. So he was
moving theirs, but then he realizes that there are others.
Right.
So what he is realizing is that while the FBI had their operation going on, there was also some other shit going on, because there were the other, like, recording devices and bugs and stuff in the room.
Right.
So, you know, he goes and looks, he finds the hallway, the back hallway situation, where basically it's like a, all the rooms have like a double-sided mirror, and like, you know, you could switch on a speaker and hear what's going on in the room. So he kind of, he discovers that, and he's like, oh shit, let me call my boss, like, we have a problem.
Right.
Or whatever. So, but I think, so we realize that this hotel has this certain kind of history of like some fucked up things were happening here. Yeah. And so the bosses in Pennsylvania were, you know, recording all these things that were going on in these rooms and had all this information on all these people. Mm. And this is around the time of, like, is it J. Edgar Hoover's, like, FBI time, and, like, these scandals and things like that were coming out. Like, this is around the time when, like, celebrity scandals were kind of becoming more and more popular. Mm-hmm. Like, not like tabloids and like stuff like that, and like government scandals and all that. Like, these things are becoming more and more popular. Like, Nixon is in office. Like, there's things going down.
Yeah.
So I tend to believe that the hotel in itself was like maybe like CIA owned or like the government or something.
Well, there was definitely the allusion to the fact that, you know, there was government surveillance going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also just kind of like, okay, after, say, for instance, because what was that? John Hamm's character was also, his name was Dwight Broadbeck. He was Agent Broadbeck.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls J. Edgar Hoover to tell him, like, yo, you know, we got some other surveillance going on that's not ours.
Yeah.
And, you know, we may have to, you know, we may have a problem here. But at the same time, he's like, well, I've just witnessed a kidnapping.
Yeah.
And so the kidnapping just so happens to be Emily Summerspring.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kidnapped, apparently, her little sister,
mm-hmm.
Ruth Summerspring.
Rose. And,
well, it says Ruth here, but
yeah, it's Rose.
It's Rose. And they tell him not to interfere with that shit.
Look. Like, shit, we got other shit. We got other fish to fry.
Yeah, they tell him, like, yeah, don't interfere with that. Leave that shit the fuck alone. Just, you know, make sure that no one in that hotel leaves from there.
Yeah.
And so he goes out. Agent Broadbeck goes out. He disables everyone's cars. While this is going on, Darlene Sweet is rehearsing. Like, she's singing.
Yeah.
And what we find out is, like, those bundles that she had was really just soundproofing for the room. Like, the shit that I need for the office, you know? When I'm doing the podcast. But, like, she had the soundproofing and she's singing. And Agent Broadbeck, you know, as he's, you know, discovering this hallway with the double-sided mirrors and he can watch anybody's room, he notices that, and, you know, there's a speaker where you can hear what's going on in the room and everything else. He also observes Father Flynn digging up the room. Like, he's digging up a hole in the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Because, flashback, years prior to...
He robbed an armored truck.
He robbed an armored truck, and his brother buried the loot in the room at that hotel.
Yeah.
Only it was the wrong room because the money wasn't there.
Yeah.
So, eventually, you know, after Agent Broadbeck finds out, he tells the FBI or whatever what the situation is. Instead of heeding the advice of the FBI not to interfere with the kidnapping, he, of course, goes in there, calls himself being a big man, rescues Rose, only to get shotgun blast to the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Dead.
That was rough. That was also a real big surprise, because I'm thinking he about to be like the, you know, part of the whole shebang, like part of the whole film, but like, blasted his ass right on out of there.
I knew she was gonna shoot him. I just felt like, yeah, this, she won't shoot him.
Yeah, okay.
I felt it. Now, what I did not know is that somebody else was going to be behind that particular window when she did shoot him. That I did not see coming.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That I did not see coming, but I knew she was going to shoot him when he came in there. One of the things about this film, of course, is that we're seeing the same things happening, but from different perspectives from each of the actors.
Yeah.
So, you're seeing how... Father Flynn is, you know, noticing what's going on around the hotel. You're seeing how Darlene Sweet is seeing what's going on around the hotel, and Dwight Broadbeck and Emily and Rose Summerspring. We're seeing how they're perceiving everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of Agent Broadbeck getting shot, Miles Miller also gets shot, and he gets shot while he's with the priest.
Mm-hmm.
Because the priest is trying to find out where the money is that his brother had buried in the hotel. Mm-hmm. So, okay, and this is where I'm getting like a look and like, so he, why are you looking at me like that?
Come on.
No, because I'm trying to think through this shit. So he, damn. So, I'm really drawing a blank right now, babe.
Oh my gosh.
You gonna help me with this?
I don't know. You haven't said anything. You've been saying for like a minute.
Thanks, babe. So,
oh my gosh.
Father Flynn is asking Miles Miller to help him. Well, he doesn't necessarily tell him to help him find the money, but he's trying to figure out which room it could be in. And he settles upon Darlene Sweet's room. So what he does is he tries to befriend Darlene Sweet. He said, well, you know what? I heard you singing and I really did enjoy your singing. Would you mind if I, like, you know, got you something to eat as payment for you letting me hear you sing? Mm-hmm. And they go to, you know, the restaurant in the hotel, which has, you know, like fucking 60-day-old sandwiches in this vending machine or whatever. And they were eating pie, which I thought was also pretty fucking risky for them to be eating too. Mm-hmm. But he's really just trying to ply her with, he's trying to ply her with not only his kindness, but he's also trying to drug her because he believes that the money is buried in her room, which is right next door to his.
Which it is.
Which it is. But when she, when he tries to disarm her with the fact that, okay, I have memory loss.
Which he does.
Which he does, but he's also using that to kind of, you know, ingratiate himself to her so where she's more trusting of him when he ultimately tries to drug her.
Which she peeps it.
Which she peeps and knocks him the fuck out.
Get it, girl.
Right. Which, now that I'm thinking about it, goes back to how he gets with Miles to even go to the back rooms.
Yeah.
Because Miles catches, you know, sees him knocked the fuck out in the middle of the lobby, mm-hmm. with, you know, glass all in his hair. He's like, yo, just make me a drink, little boy. Just, you know, I fell. I'm an old man, this, that, and the other. And so, you know, she peeps that he's trying to drug her and everything else. And she's trying to get the fuck up out of there. Only to realize that, oh shit, my car doesn't start.
Well, she's realizing a lot of things.
Well, she's realizing a lot of things.
She has some realizations and then is like, she sees the kidnapping, that room. She sees what the fuck is going on in their right. room.
And she saw when Agent Broadback
messing with the cars.
Disarming the cars.
Yeah.
And then she also saw Agent Broadback try to get into that room. He ultimately does get into that room and she sees him get blasted.
Yeah.
And she tries to leave and she can't.
Yeah.
Because the car won't start. Mm-hmm. And while that's going on, Father Flynn, see, like, this, like, Father Flynn shows up to the side of the car. Yeah, and he's like,
listen.
My bad.
For trying like, to, trying I'm to, trying to fucking trying to get this money. Feet. We could split it. Blase split.
I wasn't trying to, like, diddle. He said, I wasn't trying to diddle you. I wasn't trying to, like, fuck with you or nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? I feel like, yo, the money had to be in your room, and I had to figure out a way to get you up out of there or, like, you know, make it a way I can get to it.
But then he, like, spits the real because he's like, look, all this fucked up shit going on, and you got the FBI man's gun. Do you really want to be a black woman in the woods by yourself with a gun when the police come?
Right.
And she like, shit, no. And he's like, okay, let's work together and get the money or whatever. And, you know what I'm saying, we'll work together on this right. whole situation.
Now, this is also happening. So they devise a plan where she would go back to the room. She's singing like she was before. And it would cover the noise of him, like, trying to dig up the floor.
Yeah.
And they know that there's a two-sided mirror.
Yeah.
And at this point, they know that there's a two-sided mirror in the room.
And she knows that Emily knows that there's a two-sided mirror. Right. So she knows that she can be, she could be back there.
Right. Walking back there. Walking back there. But
she, the thing about the double-sided mirror is she doesn't, she has no idea if she is there or not, but they just assume that she will be.
Right. And she was.
And we also learn in that time that, they were in a cult, the Emily and Rose or whatever were in that cult?
No, we don't learn that at that moment.
Yeah, okay.
We don't learn it at that moment. Because I, like, it, and see, this is what, like
it's hard movie, to go, it's kind of hard to go scene by scene,
because it goes back and forth.
Yeah, it jumps around a lot.
It jumps around a lot. So, like, you're getting things from everyone's perspective at different times, and it all leads to, like these stories are running concurrently.
Yeah.
So, we don't get that. But Emily, at this particular point, is, like, she's skeptical of everybody. She's trying to figure out where everyone is. And eventually they find the money. Like, Darlene Sweet and Father Flynn, they find the money. And this is where I'm getting lost.
So Rose, the little sister, has called called on the phone because, yeah. So she got untied because, what is his name? Seymour Sullivan?
Yeah.
Unties her, so now she's free. So she's called the cult leader who she's in love with and told him, this is where I'm at or whatever, like, you know, you about to come get me or whatever.
Billy Lee.
Yeah, so that's how, then we're kind of introduced to, they were in a cult, like, that's pretty, we find out, at, right. like, after and a while, were, we find out somehow that they were not escaping.
She was Emily was escaping, sister.
But she wanted to get her sister out of there, right. too. So it was kind of, but Billy Lee, who was the leader of this call, had taken a liking to Rose, the sister. So, and she also was really into him. Like, she was pretty much in love with him and, like, you know,
she worshiped him.
Yeah. So she, had called and was like, hey boo, right. this is where I'm at. So that kind of leads to, you know, Darlene and Pastor Flynn have, or Father Flynn have, they found the money, but they're not going to get away with it.
No, they're not. So, that kind of go back into, like, the whole cult thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get the flashback of how Rose comes across Billy Lee.
Yeah.
And how he kind of seduces her to become a part of that group that they become a part of, that they eventually were trying, well, her sister was trying to escape from.
Yeah, her sister, I think, came because her
younger sister.
Older sister came because the younger sister was involved in it. And she was like, all right, like, maybe I'll try it out. But then she was like, no, fuck that. Yeah. Like, I'm not here for it. Like, you know. So that was I think that was the backstory that I liked the most.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love learning about cults. It's very interesting to me. But I think that was the backstory that I really, I really enjoyed that the most. Maybe it was because Thor was there. Was that Thor? That was Thor.
I think that was Thor.
Chris Hemsworth?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that backstory the most.
I think I like Darlene Sweets the most, only because it kind of leads into what we'll ultimately find out later in the movie. Like, Darlene kind of knows when motherfuckers hustling. And she, like, it also kind of leads into, like, her suspicion with Father Flynn when he was trying to drug her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she could tell that this is a hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kind of playing into it for him to feel like she was falling into it. But she knew what was up. And that's why she clocked his ass with that goddamn.
Yeah, like she
knew what the hustle was. And so, eventually, Billy Lee shows up to the hotel. And
with his, like, squad of culty folk.
Yeah, with his henchmen, basically.
Yeah.
He shows up there with the henchmen, and now everyone in the hotel who's alive still,
mm-hmm.
are brought all to the lobby. And, of course, like, there's all the money that Father Flynn and Darlene Sweet have, and they put that on the fucking roulette table.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy Lee is basically trying to figure out, okay, who's, you know, what's everybody's story?
He was, and I'm like,
and I didn't understand why he gave a fuck about what everybody's story was.
Isn't that called, like, the antagonist of the situation? Where, like, he is kind of, like, he's there to piss you off. Like, he's there to, like, get on everyone's nerves. But because of his weird, like, cultish, I need to be in control of everything ways, I think part of that was, like, he's deciding what to do next. because the way he was acting, it was like very erratic the way he was acting. I think he was trying to decide what to do next. He wanted to be in control of the situation, and he wanted to like egg it on a little bit and like make everyone kind of squirm. So he's like, what's everybody's story? Like, what's going on with this money? Like, what, you know, well, what kind of hotel is this?
And they, not only that, those like, you know, like they kept asking, you know, what kind of hotel is this? Is this like a pervy hotel?
Is this some kind of pervert hotel?
Yeah, they kept asking that. But then it was just like, at a certain point, like, what does it matter what their story is? Unless, of course, you just want, okay, for storytelling purposes, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it was but partially for storytelling purposes and partially for...
You're going to kill them anyway. See, and that was the thing. Like, before he showed up, Emily kept asking Miles. She kept asking Miles about... Damn, what was it she was asking Miles about? She kept asking him, like, did he know where everyone was?
Oh, and then she was asking... Because then we kind of... She was asking, like, what about the hotel and, like, the history of it and stuff. And he was telling her all, like, the fucked up shit that he's done and seen and stuff like that.
Yeah, but she was asking him more so about who's all here. And he kept saying, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, you know, he was begging for his life, like, please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. And she was like, Rose said, that's not up to us. Mm-hmm. And she like, what do you mean it's not up to us? She like, what did you do? And that's when the revelation that, you know, Billy Lee was on his way and, you know, the whole thing with Billy Lee being the antagonist and, like, egging everyone on. And basically fleshing out everyone's stories as to where they were, who they were, where they come from, and everything else. Around this time is where we get the story of Miles Miller and how Miles Miller became, or somewhat you kind of understand why he's so timid, or maybe why he's so withdrawn. And part of that is because of his experience in the Vietnam War.
I mean, he's also on drugs.
And he's on drugs, but...
Because part of it was PTSD, basically, from, like, the Vietnam War. Like, he was a sniper.
Right.
So, he's, you know, snipers be sniping. Like, they be killing people.
Snipers be sniping.
They be, I mean, I'm just saying, like, a sniper probably, maybe, kills, I'm not really sure, but I would think a sniper would kill the most people because you're sniping. So, like, you just taking people out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Other than, like, hand-to-hand combat, which is traumatic for other reasons, like you probably got to stab somebody or strangle somebody. Like, you got to do a lot of shit.
Stab, stab, stab.
So, he's traumatized because he's killed a lot of people from that. And I think also him being a sniper and a war vet is the reason why whoever got him to work at this hotel got him, because they consider him like he's a stone cold killer.
Yeah.
So, like, he has killed other people. Because he said something like, he's like, I killed 123
people.
Like, and not all of them were from the war. Some of them was from that hotel. No. Like, he's killed people. He's seen shit or whatever. So, like, he's, in a way, was, like, the perfect person for this job.
Yeah.
Which I think he was a CIA, which basically is, like, a CIA operative or whoever. Like, whoever's above the FBI. Because I think the hotel. Well,
see, and that was the thing. That's why I felt like, you know, the who his bosses were kind of. Like, that open-ended thing, like, because you never really know who his bosses were. They just kept saying, like, I sent it to my bosses in Pennsylvania. Okay. Fuck, the CIA is in Langley, Virginia.
So I mean, I think we're kind of supposed to be under the, I don't know, I'm guessing, maybe I'm just, like, reaching, but I'm guessing that his bosses either were, like, it was somebody, like, with the government.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the mob. Cause I know.
Okay. That
could maybe work. The mob, but so you know, we're basically getting to the point where Billy Lee is antagonizing everyone. He's asking them about their stories or whatever, but he's also getting agitated to the point where he's ready to kill somebody, and he eventually does, and he kills Emily, Rose's sister.
I mean, I think he wanted to kill her anyway.
Yeah, because she took her sister away,
and also because she didn't fall for his.
Bullshit.
Like, you know, she kind of played him like, yeah, I'm here because I want to, you know, my sister says you treat her pretty good and stuff. Like, he got played. And then, like, he stole, you know, his star student, which is Rose, and kind of, you know, tried to get away with that. So he was offended and pissed off anyway.
Right. And it's also one of the reasons why I think he wanted to kill again when Darlene called him out on his shit. Because Darlene basically said, look, I know your type. Like, you talk, you know, just for the sake of talking to make, you know, you don't really believe the shit that you're saying, but you want everybody else to believe that you believe.
Yeah, she
saying.
Was like, I'm bored of like, men
I'm,
like you.
I'm bored of men like
and
you.
And I'm like, yes, get these niggas in check. We are bored with you men.
Well, all right. but he, you could tell she hit him in the gut with that.
Yeah.
Because he was just, he ain't have shit, he ain't have a comeback for that. So what does he do? He wants to play Russian roulette and like, yo, we gonna play this game and the power goes out. And, yeah.
I'm not really sure how Miles got the gun, but he gets the gun and he starts fucking them up.
Yeah, so, yeah, Miles starts shooting people and, like, there's, like, you know, Father Flynn headbutts somebody. This is after they've told, like, they've come clean with their shit. Like, I'm a singer and I've robbed this bank, you know, this armored truck years ago. Money was in the... Like, they tell all of their stories. And, you know, Billy Lee ends up dead. Emily ends up dead. Rose ends up dead. Shit, Miles ends up taking out the Colt, you know, henchmen and shit. Like
sniping.
He sniped them niggas from, like, behind cars and all this other stuff. But before Rose ends up dead, though, like, she's mourning over Billy Lee's body.
Yeah, he comes trying to apologize, like, I'm so sorry, and I knew she was about to cause hell. Cause
stab, stab, stab.
She stabbed him, you know, and then, you know, he's laying there dying and shit.
And he gives his last rites to Father Flynn, who really isn't a father, but it helps him, you know.
It made him feel better.
Made him feel better as he passed on. And event like, well, at the end of this, Darlene Sweet ends up performing in a hotel where she was initially, you know, staying at that hotel for anyway. She stayed on the outskirts of Reno, Nevada.
Yeah.
She ends up going to that hotel and performing. Mm-hmm. And Father Flynn
with no wig.
With no wig. And Father Flynn, who's Doc O'Kelly.
Yeah.
Shows up in support of her.
I think they kind of went off kind of together. Like, they just been through this, like, fucked up shit. So they kind of probably, like, went wherever they were going to go together. Like, they throw the film in the fire. They throw the ledger that they all signed in the fire. And they're kind of like, look, we about to ride out.
Yeah. And they kept the money.
Yeah.
So there's that. How many stars would you give this film, babe? Like, I kind of feel like, eh.
I liked it and I thought it was really suspenseful. I liked like the twists and turns of it. It did give me like, it was like suspense thriller. I think I would give it like 2.5, 2.75.
Okay.
Maybe 3. I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was well done. I mean, I liked it.
I'll give it 2.
I mean, it was 2 hours and 20 minutes.
I feel like this though. I feel like, one, there's so much of this movie that I would probably receive it better if I were to see it again. Like, maybe there was some... Because obviously, like, even right now, I'm like, man, I'm missing something. Like, I feel like I'm missing something, and I can't really judge it as much as I really would like to, only because I feel like there's so much of it that I missed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably, like, coloring the way that I'm reviewing this right now, because I feel like I missed a lot.
Did you fall asleep?
No, I didn't fall asleep. I'm just saying, like, I'm sure that there are little, you know, like, minor details that are critical to the storytelling.
Well, I think,
but because of the way this story is told, and we're trying to just basically do this off a recall, like, I'm sure I'm missing something.
Well, I think with, like, what you're trying to do, like, go scene by scene, it's hard with a movie like that because it jumps around so much. Yeah. So you can't really, like, tell the story straight through. Because I feel like I watched it, and I feel like I paid really good attention, and I remembered a lot of things, but it's not the kind of story that you could just go through and just retell.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those things, like, you have to see it to kind of know, because there's so, especially when there's so many flashbacks and then you're seeing the same thing from so many different point of views.
Right.
It's kind of hard to, like, go through and, like, tell that story.
You're right, baby.
Duh.
But yeah, man, that's what we saw. Bad Times at the El Royale and A Star Is Born. So, we hope you guys enjoy this episode of the Baywatch podcast. We hope to hear and see from you guys soon. But before we go, let me remind you guys how to get in touch with us over here at the Baywatch Podcast and let your voices be heard over here. Go ahead and hit us up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. We'll play them on the show and respond right here. You can also email us at feedback@baywatchpodcast.com. Wait, baywatchpod.com. That's feedback@thebaywatchpod.com. Leave those emails. Of course, we'll read those emails here live on the show and respond here as well. Hit us up on Twitter. My name on Twitter is Mr_Span. And you are, baby?
Pat. Podcast Bay.
There you go. So go ahead and follow us, chop it up with us throughout the week. Hit us up on the website at www.thebaywatchpod.com. You can vote in the polls. You can leave comments there. You can listen to replays of the show right there on the website. You can also hit the links on the website to go to the Span Report Podcast Network store and get yourself some merch, man. Get a hoodie or even a coffee mug or something. That's all. Just get you a little something for yourself. A little Baywatch stuff. We appreciate you. And we'll talk to you guys again soon. So until next time, fam. Peace.
Bye.